Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back at 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm a small business owner just like you, and I work without a net just like you. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there and all the other things you can do. Don't forget, it's entrepreneurial nirvana. And that's what Joan Pride likes to, the way that Joan Pride likes to think about our website. As you know, she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She's with us right now. Joan, welcome back.
Entrepreneurial nirvana?
Isn't that what you called it once?
I'd like you to say that five times fast. I think it's possible.
I can't say it two times fast. What are you talking about?
Or even once.
Or small business heaven. That's the other thing you called it too, isn't it? Didn't you say that once?
All the time.
Yeah. And now that we're up on the ABC Starguide satellite 24/7, now that it's all blasting game all the time on the internet and the radio, you're really excited about that, aren't you?
Is that why I'm having nightmares every night?
That's why you've got the hives, breaking out in hives, right,
right.
Joan? You didn't know exactly why.
Right.
Okay, let's get into the letter, Joan, and talk about the presidential race, which is starting to gel a little bit, although what happened yesterday in Wisconsin, was clearly a win for Mr. Kerry, but it wasn't a resounding win, was it? Mr. Edwards had something to say about that.
Well, that was an interesting outcome. It's probably a helpful outcome for Kerry just because it sort of puts the final nail in Howard Dean's coffin,
right.
Mr. Dean having run, I think, a distant third, if I'm not mistaken. Edwards ran a strong second, and you can say, well, this is a resurgence for Edwards, and that may be true, but Mr. Kerry sure has won a lot more primary races than Mr. Edwards, and it may just add more fuel to the fire of people who say that Mr. Edwards would end up being a vice presidential nominee, although I'm not convinced that that's what's going to happen.
Well, there's no question that's what's going to happen, Joan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
Do you think Mr. Kerry can even come close to no president in modern times has won the presidency when he lost the South.
But there's other Southerners he could select.
Well, but Mr. Edwards has now got the visibility, he's now got the momentum, and, of course, Edwards has got the baggage being a trial lawyer. In my opinion, that's major baggage.
That was my thought. Yeah.
Major baggage. But, you know, a lot of people don't think that.
Mr. Kerry might steal our governor of my great state of Virginia, Mr. Warner.
Is that right? I hadn't thought about that, maybe. I had not heard that.
Yeah.
Well, how about Mr. Clark? You know, he's a Southerner. He's an Arkansas.
Yeah, he's from Arkansas.
General Clark, I should say. Well, I hate to leap on Kerry's bandwagon. It's really not all that early, but you know, Joan, a lot of really smart people, including yours truly, was totally wrong about Mr. Dean.
And myself, too.
Yeah, we were in pretty good company, weren't we?
Well, you know what I thought was happening? When I read about all his grassroots business, that he was using the Internet, I thought, well, that's not something that no one else has done before. And I thought he would use it to his advantage
right. And
really get this grassroots support. And he was raising money like crazy. Now, the only thing that I wondered about, which turned out to be the deciding factor, was would he do something, he's known as a loose cannon, and would that affect his candidacy? And it certainly did.
But, you know, Joan, I look back on my prediction about Dean, which I predicted he would be the nominee and that he would lose, lose the election. But, Joan, I look back on that, and I wish I had been more thoughtful about my prediction. But at the same time, who would have ever thought that Kerry would be the one to emerge?
Well,
Kerry's
candidacy was in free fall back at that time. What we didn't take into account, which the news media completely ignored, was this is Kerry's style. If you go back to his last Senate reelection campaign, he was in a dogfight with the governor of Massachusetts,
right.
William Weld.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thought Weld was going to win. But Kerry fights best when he is pushed back into a corner. And certainly that happened. In a way, it probably helped Kerry that Dean was up so high in the polls, that he felt himself losing ground, and that caused him to sort of, I guess, fight back.
Well, now, just so we don't get more egg on our face, we're not going to say that Kerry's going to be the nominee. But let's frame it this way, because this is kind of the way Kiplinger did it in the letter this week. If there were a Kerry Bush election, if that were to happen in somebody's lifetime, would it really? You guys posed the question: would it really much matter? What would be different?
Let's talk about that a little bit. That's what this lead answers today. That's a good question.
Yeah. So what would be different?
Well, we say certainly ideologically.
Okay, wait. Let's. I'm sorry, Joan. Start out with what would be the same. What wouldn't be different?
Well, I think you'd still want to have a strong defense. You'd still have everybody talking about tax cuts. You would have both the Democrat. Well, I think it depends on the Democrat. I think you would generally hear more lip service about open markets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back to strong defense. Do you think Mr. Kerry would be strong on defense, as strong on defense as Mr. Bush is?
Well, I think you have to define it. I would think in his own way he certainly would be.
Yeah. But I don't think it would be the same. I mean, in other words, if we're talking about things that would not be much different, one of the things you guys point out that won't be much different is neither one of them are going to have much money to play with. Right?
Right, but they'll talk about tax cuts, but probably won't be able to do a lot about them.
Either one of them. But Mr. Kerry is going to want to increase taxes, right? He's going to want to tax
the
rich.
He wants to roll back some of the tax cuts for the wealthy,
right,
and keep them in place for the less wealthy.
Right. See, I don't think you can talk about tax cuts and Mr. Kerry in the same conversation, can you?
Well, I'll have to dig out. We actually did some work on the tax letter about the Democratic presidential nominees, and they were all talking about certain forms of tax cuts. And I know Kerry had a whole boatload of them, so I'll dig that out at the next break and
I'd like to know about that. Gridlock is interesting. Now we haven't had much gridlock it recently because the Republicans own all three houses, but Mr. Bush certainly hasn't done any vetoing, which is
yeah. But the natives are getting restless. The natives are getting very restless.
Right, and so but if there now that's one thing that would be different if there were a Kerry presidency. Then you would have some with the Republican House and Senate, controlled Senate. There would be more gridlock, a la Clinton, the Clinton era, right?
Well, no, we're saying there'll be gridlock either way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right, stand by. We'll have to talk about that when we come back after these messages and some other areas that would be different, quite a bit different, about a Kerry presidency as opposed to continuing the Bush administration. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend, Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Let me tell you, I got some news for you. We're back. It's 23 after. Thanks for hanging around with us today. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's with Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter, and Joan actually thinks she dug up something from the archives, from the bowels of somewhere. I don't know where she found this stuff, but I was disparaging Mr. Kerry's ability to focus on or to deliver tax cuts, and Joan, you say you have some evidence?
Well, first of all, there are no bowels involved. This is my own research,
which is
impeccable.
And clean, right, okay.
Yes. I have a whole list. I'm not going to bore your listeners with every detail unless you want me to.
Thank you.
I have a whole list of tax cuts, job credits, work credits, depreciation help for small startups, a whole bunch of different things here.
Now, where has he floated these issues?
On the campaign trail.
How come I've never heard him say any of those things?
Because you're not paying attention.
No, I listen to him. I've been listening to him.
Well,
I
you're not
heard him,
paying close.
I haven't heard
attention.
Him say any of those things.
Well, he has.
All I've heard him say was that he wanted to repeal half of the Bush tax cuts.
But see, that's the only part you were listening to.
No,
and that's
I...
the only part that the media fed you.
Ah, okay. Well, I can't help that.
It's
I mean, I can't go to
media.
I can't
They're...
go to Iowa. Well, you know, Joan, let me ask you this question now. What is his record on delivering over his career? What has been his record on delivering tax cuts? Has he been a taxer or a tax cutter?
Oh, he's an excellent tax cutter.
He is?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, right. That's what I thought. So we'll have to find. What we got to do is find out. You know, talking a good game is one thing, but can he? Will he deliver? And that's a whole other thing. And of course, here's what we have to remember, John. And this is to get back to the gridlock issue. You don't think the Republicans, if he were the president, you don't think the Republican House or Senate is going to let him co-opt that Republican ground, did you?
Well, never know.
You know, you think about it. I mean, that's one of the
That's assuming that the Senate and the House stay Republican.
Well, that's true. That's true. That would be an interesting situation if Kerry were to win the White House. I wouldn't have any idea how to call that. Would you? What the House and the Senate would do?
That's the problem. It depends on his coattails, whether he has them or not.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And if Bush wins, you have to figure that the House and Senate would stay Republican because he would certainly, you would think, have coattails.
Would Mr. Kerry finish the job in Iraq in a way that would be visionary, or would he just say, you know what, we got to get out of here as soon as we can? What do you think?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, you're framing the question as if the only proper way to do it is to stay in for a long time.
No. Well, okay. All right. I guess maybe you're right because that's what I think. But yeah. Which way would he go, though? Would he say, no, I mean, he might say, you know what, we've done our job, let's get out of there right away.
Well, he might say, I'm tired of our boys and girls getting picked off one after the other, and I want to stop it.
Would Mr. Kerry be...
You have to wonder if Mr. Kerry won. You know, I'm not saying he will. Mr. Bush still seems like the winner. But let's say Mr. Kerry did win. You'd have to wonder what the reasons were, and it's possible, if you were to see a Kerry win, that one of the reasons might have been Americans repudiating the policy in Iraq. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out.
That could be true. What about trade? Now, one of the things that bothers me about Mr. Kerry is he goes around complaining about all the jobs that have been lost, and it really bothers me, any politician who goes around saying that the reason we've lost jobs is because politicians haven't done their job, because the government hasn't done their job. And you and I both know that free trade is good. I mean, John, I think you're a free trader. That free trade is ultimately good for everybody, and even though sometimes it creates winners and losers. But
I'm as much of a free trader as a crazy liberal can be, I guess.
Well, but you know, Mr. Kerry's been going around blaming Mr. Bush for job losses. Is that fair?
Well, I think one of the problems about calling people free traders is, you know, everybody, both the other side, EU, China, everybody tries to call themselves free traders, but then everybody protects their own interests.
Right.
And I don't think the Republicans are any different in trying to protect their own interests. Look at Bush with the steel tariffs.
Which was a big mistake, and I said that, as you know, on the show immediately.
Right.
But here's the thing. Of course, we have to remember, Joan, as you know, what politicians say when they're running for office is a lot different from what actually happens, partially because they don't do what they say and partially because some things that they campaign on that they say they're going to change, they never had a chance to control anyway.
That's right. Boy, that's certainly true.
Yeah. And so whenever we're listening to politicians of any stripe, Joan, and I think you'd agree with me on this, We have to be as informed as possible so that when somebody tells us, hey, folks, I've got a free lunch for you, then, you know, we're smart enough to know, you know what, that man's lying because there are no free lunches.
Yeah, and I'm sure President Bush never acted that way in the campaign trail, right?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. He's a politician.
Yeah, well, that's
great. I'm trying to be fair here. What about the Patriot Act? How do you think Mr. Kerry will do on the Patriot Act?
Well, what we were saying, actually, in this case, remember, with this lead, we're not talking just John Kerry, since we're trying to hedge our bets and not box ourselves in as we did with Mr. Dean. We say that Mr. Bush would beef it up, but whatever Democrat is elected, that they probably wouldn't. The Patriot Act being that whole bunch of rules that was enacted designed to stop terrorism.
Right.
And maybe invade our privacy a little bit.
Which you and I've talked about before, that if you're going to protect people in this day and time, unfortunately, some liberties have to be impinged, and we just have to all learn what we're willing to live with.
Trade-off.
Quick break, 29 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. Mm-hmm.
celebrating 6 years as radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with us. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one last thing on the differences between a Kerry and a Bush administration that I think is really important to point out, and that's the impact they would have on the judiciary. Now, I don't know. Mr. Bush hasn't had a lot of luck with the judiciary, has he?
You mean appointing?
Well, yeah, because he's had some problems with the Senate, the Democrats.
Seems to me that the overwhelming majority of his appointments have gone through.
But he's had some. He's had several that he didn't get through, and I didn't say he was ineffective. I said he's had some challenges.
Well, you did. You said he didn't have a lot of luck with his judicial.
Okay. All right. Sherry. Thanks for correcting me.
See how
now,
ornery I am.
What about you know, in the next 4 years, surely, Joan, there will be some changes on the Supreme Court.
Well, it was funny, you know, everybody was so sure that once the Republican got into office in November of 2000, that you would have at least two major resignations,
right.
The Chief Justice,
mm-hmm.
Rehnquist, and Sandra Day O'Connor,
mm-hmm.
both of whom I believe are either in their late 70s or close to 80.
Yeah.
And then they said, no, we want to stay. And it doesn't look like they're ready to go anytime soon. So
surely in the next 4 years there would be some. So there's a lot at stake for both parties, aren't there, right now in the judiciary?
But the original idea was, well, that they would leave and then Bush would make the appointments and then these people would be in for 20 or 30 years. But if these ornery guys decide to stay another 2-3 years, and let's say Mr. Kerry did win the election,
mm-hmm.
then it's a whole new ballgame. It's not what anybody had thought would happen.
Absolutely.
When Mr. Bush was first elected.
The people that Mr. Bush will appoint to the Supreme Court, and the difference between who Mr. Bush would appoint and the people that Mr. Kerry would appoint.
Or any other Democrat.
Is like the difference between lightning and lightning bug.
But I just want to make sure that we didn't box ourselves in saying Mr. Kerry here.
I wouldn't want you to take a stand or anything, John.
after we went down in flames with Mr. Dean, I'm just trying to put a very.
And I was right there with
that.
You. What about gasoline, Joan? Let's move over to page 2. We got bad news coming up with gasoline.
I don't think we want to talk about gasoline.
This is depressing, isn't it? What's up?
Well, listen to what we're saying. Think gasoline is expensive now? Just wait until spring.
Yeah.
We're saying prices are going up and up and up. And as you know, OPEC is now actually, you know, we were talking about, you know, practically the death of OPEC recently, but OPEC now is starting to try to pull themselves together and restrict output.
Well, I wonder, and I don't think you say anything in here about this, I wonder, I thought that ultimately, and it still may happen, that Iraq, with its second largest reserves in the world of crude, that getting Iraq back into the marketplace, getting that country back into the marketplace for their own account, that might actually sort of offset some of the influences and the pressures of OPEC.
That's a good point. And also, I should probably point out, just to contradict myself, that as important as OPEC is, they are not as important as they were back in the 70s, because there's also a lot, as you know, a lot of non-OPEC producers out there.
Absolutely.
That'll just do whatever the heck they want.
Well, you know, this is a really dangerous thing that could be going on, Joan, because, you know, this economy, the global economy, is emerging and strengthening, but it's still kind of fragile. And we don't need the inflationary and the expensive spike in crude prices.
Right, that's right.
And so this could really be, I can see there being some real serious political pressure being put on some of these producers, and it'll be interesting to me over the next couple of years to see how the Iraqi oil entering the marketplace, when Iraq gets settled down and they start pumping oil for their own account over there in earnest, to see how that could affect the prices, because they got a lot of oil over there.
Sure do.
Yeah. Joan, let's move on down and talk about Canada and Mexico. Now, one of the things you guys point out is that those economies are starting to come back too. As we were saying, globally, the global economy is doing well, but even Mexico, and this was, I didn't think Mexico was doing so well.
I didn't either, but we say they are, so I'll believe that.
You believe everything you read in this in the letters, don't you, John?
Funny
well,
how that works.
Some of the, you know, it kind of makes sense in a way that I mean, they've had a lot of investment down there. There's been a lot of investment but you know, they've lost a bunch of jobs to China, just like we lost jobs to Mexico.
Isn't that kind of ironic?
Well, it's very ironic over the last 10 years. But if Mexico and Canada, who are two great, very large trading partners with us, really, if we can get their economy going, that's going to be good for America, because, as we know, all we got to do is drive over there. 20 till. We'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're back at 17 till. Joan Pride is with the Kiplinger Editors, and they got a website that I'd like to encourage you to check out. It's kiplinger.com, and it's just like it sounds, kiplinger.com. Lots of free stuff there. You can also find out about how to subscribe to their outstanding publications, the flagship Kiplinger letter, which has been out since 1923, now in its 81st year, and comes every week by email or by print. You can have it either way, and or if you're like me, you can't get enough of it, you get it both ways. And also, they've got three outstanding biweekly letters, the agriculture letter, the tax letter, and the California letter. And then there's a magazine that you can get on your newsstands, or you can order by subscription. Joan, what's the name of that magazine?
Called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah. And also, and by the way, folks, there's a 30-day free trial that you can get. They'll send you the publications for a month to see if you like it. And if you don't, they won't bill you for it. If you do, they'll let you pay them. And then
we'll bill you.
There you go. And they can also call a phone number, can't they, Joan?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
So check that out when you get a chance. Be sure to go to the website, though, folks. I really think you'll enjoy finding out what Kiplinger has to say. Joan, let's move on down and talk about a little more on trade. We were talking about Canada and Mexico. It really would be handy if those two economies would pick up and we would really employ this. We start getting a little more equalized benefit out of the NAFTA agreement, and we had goods rolling across both borders. That'd be pretty handy, wouldn't it?
Oh, no question about it.
That could be good for everybody, wouldn't it be nice to wake up in 5 or 8 years and all of a sudden realize that there were some benefits out of NAFTA in Mexico that we just didn't see coming, that, you know, I mean, I know that's like a little like a Pollyanna wish there, but you know, think about it, Joan.
A beautiful dream.
Well, you know, I mean, my point is Mexico wasn't an entrepreneurial country. It wasn't an industrialized country.
Right.
And maybe some of the capitalism things that they learned over the last 10 years, it's just taken a little longer to germinate.
Well, that's true. That's possible.
And of course, the ringer in all that is what the politicians do down there, right?
Well, that's always the wild card.
Yeah, that's the problem. And as far as China's concerned, the big issue right now with China is trying to get them to let their currency float, isn't it?
Well, this is sort of interesting because your listeners have probably seen a lot in the media lately that China is considering ending this situation where it pegs the value of the yuan to
right.
the dollar.
Right.
But we're saying don't believe it.
Yeah. They're not going to, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to do it because it's too much to their advantage to peg it to the dollar, because that gives them a competitive advantage, doesn't it?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, especially with our dollar dropping like it is. That's the problem that they don't have the problem that Europe now has with the euro versus the dollar, right?
Right.
So all they got to do is look at Europe and say, we don't want any of that. So
right.
I think that's the reason why their currency is going to stay pegged to the dollar.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about interest rates. Would Mr. Greenspan dare raise interest rates in an election year?
Well, we're saying it's possible what we're saying is that he wouldn't avoid raising them if he felt it was important economically. He wouldn't avoid raising them just for political reasons.
He needs to reload, doesn't he?
We had to. He needs to reload?
He needs to restock
mm-hmm. the monetary situation, mm-hmm. right? You know, because they're about down to the basement right now.
One percentage point on the right. on the Fed funds rate.
Right, exactly.
And they don't have a lot of ammunition left if they had to fight something, a downturn. If something happened, we had another attack or something like that, and the economy softened. But I predicted, Joan, that they would raise rates in the second quarter, and that's all this year.
Okay.
And based on my Dean track record, you know, who knows?
Nobody's perfect.
But one thing you point out, though, is it's not intuitive to assume, we shouldn't assume, that just because it's an election year that the Fed won't raise rates. Their history has shown that they will, doesn't it? Mr. Herbert Walker Bush knows about that, doesn't he?
Oh, only too well.
Yeah, he still doesn't like Mr. Greenspan because he thinks Mr. Greenspan helped him to lose the election, doesn't he?
I believe also known as 41.
Yeah, there you go, Bush 41, exactly. Joan, there's bad news on the tax horizon, apparently. Executive compensation is going to get closer scrutiny by the IRS. And this is bad news for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's tough, yes. Well, what happened is, you know, with all the Enron shenanigans and everything, the IRS said, you know, we haven't been really looking at pay practices. So they went to 24 companies and really scoured everything that was going on. And they even looked at the 1040s of some of these top executives. And they found, this is just sort of random look at 24 major firms, and they found huge problems. So they said, we're going to expand this. So anytime they do an audit now of a large or medium-sized firm, they're going to be looking at pay practices.
Well, especially the really top-paid, you know, the really big money folks like you, Joan. They're going to be all over you guys.
Exactly. I mean, they're going to give.
I read this and I was really worried for you, Joan.
They told us that there is a matching principle here that they will be looking at 1040s along with the company's books. So
yeah.
I have to be very careful.
Right. Yeah. I hope you do okay on that, Joan. Joan, talk to us about some information. You got some software too that Kiplinger offers that'll help people with their taxes.
Yeah,
right?
And I'm one of those people that actually use the products talk about. I love this stuff. Okay.
What is it?
It's software to help you do your taxes. And you may not think it would help you a lot, but you'd be surprised, especially this year, if you have any capital gains or dividends. Things have gotten a lot more complicated.
Right.
It's called Kiplinger Tax Cut Software, and I'll tell you more about how to get it after the break.
Yeah, we're going to give you a website, folks. It's not expensive either, and that's the reason I wanted to tell you about it. We like cheap things or free things, and this is one of the cheap ones. Quick break, 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, there's a report, too. I want you to tell us how we can get this software, but there's also a report that's out that you guys are willing to send us, isn't there?
That's right. We have done a special supplement. At the tax letter, did a whole special supplement, 4 pages, called Your Personal Tax Return, and I highly recommend it. If you'd like a copy, what you need to do is... send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, or probably the easier thing than making you write down the address is, why don't I just give you the online address?
Yeah, that's it.
Go online at www.kiplinger.com/yourtaxes,
all right.
And that's how you can order it.
Okay,
now, the other thing is, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, folks, this is a free thing that they're offering
yes.
you, and I really encourage you to do that. Kiplinger's tax letter is recognized as one of the best tax resources in the country,
and you know why?
Yes, I do, because you're part of it, it's really top shelf stuff, folks. And anytime they want to give you something, go get it. All right, now Joan, tell us. And this is something you're going to have to pay for, but I think it's something you want to know about.
Right. Now the other thing, of course, is the software that we were talking about before the break. It's called Tax Cut, and it will help you do your taxes. It's wonderful, and the deluxe edition called Tax Cut Deluxe 2003. Costs $19.95, and then we also charge $4.95 shipping.
Right.
So you could call the toll-free number 888-4-TAX-CUT and use the code F603, or you can go to this web address.
Okay.
It's a long one,
folks. Get ready.
Yeah. Get your pencils out. Kiplinger.com/PHP/TAXCUT.HTML. in order that way.
You guys need to figure out how to make those addresses shorter than that.
I know. You're
right. But anyway, check it out, folks. But they can't download it. You guys will have to ship it to them.
Well, I seem to remember being able to download it in the past. I think if you go online, you can probably download it.
If you download it, you ought to be able to save the $5 shipping.
Right. And see, the word order, it was shorter than anything else, and that's how we fit it on the line.
Right.
So.
I got you. Okay. So check that out, folks, when you get a chance. Okay. Joan, let's move over and talk about what's going on in the marketplace with regard to hiring people. Good people, Joan, no matter what's going on in the marketplace, are always in demand, aren't they?
That's right. And, you know, there's never been a loose labor market for those with good skills. So those mm-hmm. people are always in demand, and we're saying that that's posing an even bigger problem now as hiring is starting to pick up.
Well, absolutely. You know, Joan, I don't think I told you this, but back when 4 years ago, when we had in the 90s, we had like, you know, close to 4.3 or so percent unemployment. Bob McTeer on this show said that's full employment. I was talking to Richard DeCaser, the chief economist of National City Bank, last week, and he said when we get to 5% unemployment around these days, he said that's full employment. So we're not that far off from what he considers to be full employment. And, Joan, I've been telling people for a long time, small business owners, guys, you got an opportunity to find some really good people that just find themselves out of a job through no fault of their own. You need to be reloading. You need to be getting rid of the deadwood and hiring these smart people. And, Joan, they don't have much time left.
Boy, that's certainly true. We even say that expect competition for skilled workers to get fierce and costly as this recovery continues.
What are the news, though, in some of the hiring that we're finding, some of the people we're finding out there, Joan, apparently, according to Kiplinger, the news is not too good. A lot of people aren't ready. Their reading skills, math, and science skills are not all that good.
Right, and we're talking basic skills, as you said. We're not talking, you know, highly skilled people. We're saying people who can't read or have trouble with science, and these jobs demand decent skills.
Yeah, and you know, I think I told you once before, Joan, that I talked to a guy who was opening up a greenfield, which is a brand new paper plant,
mm-hmm.
and he told us that the one he opened 10 years ago took 800 employees, and the new one takes 400 employees to run the
Ooh.
Same plant.
Right.
And the reason is because 100% of his employees use technology in the direct performance of their job.
We've got to
make sure our kids are educated for this new workplace, don't we?
Right. That's right.
Yep. And of course, another thing you guys point out is in 10 years, this is going to get worse because we're going to have a shortfall. And when the baby boomers retire, we're going to have a shortfall of 10 million jobs.
Well, that's the other problem.
It's going to get worse, not better.
We're going to have a shortfall of 10 million workers, really.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I meant. I didn't mean to say jobs.
Sorry.
All right. Once again, you've corrected me and fixed my misstatements. Thanks, Joan. Good to see you.
Thank you, Jim.
See you later.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.